Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Look at my butt. Now look at my front butt.
Wada, 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 wada.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Let the chamber pressure increase.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Only Magneto's right. There's a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
Welcome to the show. It's been one hell of a week here. I mean, we've had some very big deaths and just all sorts of weird news, like Severin announced Cruel Jaws this week. And it's going to be another one of their one-week specials where, as usual, I can guess everything's going straight to hell, which is the standard operational procedure of most limited editions nowadays, but I'm going to try it for my birthday because, damn it, I want that tie-in novel, The Cruel Jaws. I need it. But from down south, there were three big names when I was a kid. There was, the big names were Jerry Jarrett, Jerry the King, in Knoxville. Lawler and Jarrett were Memphis. We didn't get much of him down here, but we did get Ron Fuller, Bullet Bob Fuller, the Tennessee Stud Ron Fuller, Ron Wright, who operated Continental, and of course Bullet Bob Armstrong, who basically promoted a lot out of there. And that's who I watched when I was a kid, is cartoons and Bullet Bob Armstrong and his promotion. His ring names were like the Alabama Jawjacker, Bob Armstrong, Georgia Jawcracker, Jim Durango, and the Bullet. We started there in Continental Championship Wrestling. That was his big thing. That was the big federation around Knoxville, was the Continental there. It was based in Knoxville and Dorothy, Alabama, and it was owned by Ron Fuller. Oh, that was some fun to watch when I was a kid. I didn't watch that before I watched any of the WWE and all that. It was always the Fullers, the Wrights, and things. Real Southern wrestling. WWE, really. Knoxville was like the big. Knoxville and Memphis were the biggest wrestling areas in this. Well, in this area, there was Knoxville and Memphis with Jerry the King Lawler. Hold on for a second, people. This is what you get when you're dealing with a host who's dancing by himself. Crap. Trying to pick the phone here, people. Sorry.
just wanted to, because...
Guess what? Tracy.
Yeah, hey.
You're on the air. Say hello to everyone.
I hit my... Hi, how you doing out there in podcast land, everybody? What's up?
But yeah, when I was a kid, when I'm 15, Tracy, that was the Knoxville area, Bullet Bob and them. That was the big local federation. Up there you had, it was gone by the time you was old enough to even realize the Pittsburgh Federation with Bruno and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do recall him on, like, Sunday morning TV, afternoons, rather.
Yeah, it was Saturday afternoon. We got American Bandstand and then Continental Wrestling and then the Saturday afternoon movie, which is, you never know what you got. You got everything from war movies to horror films. I miss those days.
Me too, man. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
We all had those. Wild. I mean, not the host shows, but ones that would just come up with action theater, romance theater, western theater.
Yeah, there was less, but there was just like so much more. Some of it was like maybe not the best quality, but it was all you had. So you had to, you had to groove with it.
Yeah, and we got all sorts of different stuff. That's why we were, I don't understand the kids today. I've talked before on the show. They got Netflix of all these choices, but they don't watch it.
Well, maybe they need guidance, maybe they just need. We do that with my nephew and other younger people. I know sometimes they might just need guidance, but they don't all have that. They need something to like point them toward quality stuff, I guess.
Well, we didn't have any choice. It was like, okay, here you go, watch this or nothing.
Exactly.
And since it was back in the drive-in days, we would watch them during the day because we was saving all our energy for Saturday night.
True, yeah. Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
But what are you doing today? Ain't doing nothing. Wow, we're going to go out tonight.
Right.
Around here, it was Friday was date night, and Saturday was just going out with the friends night.
True. Friday here off for years. Friday was.
Yeah. Well, Saturday is when you get your friends together and then possibly meet up with the person that you're dating at the drive then later. Yeah. Those were the good old days. Can you pull up YouTube? Come on, find you, idiot. It's what you give me free balling. You're looking around for something. That's the only bad thing about having a big DVD collection is when you try to find something and you can't freaking find it because you don't know where the hell you put it the last time. That means it's either somewhere else or you're an idiot. They haven't figured out which one yet. Are you there? Well, I think we've lost our guest. Oh, well. That's what you get when you're free-balling. I'm looking through my collection to find something good but obscure to talk about. Chadwick Boseman died this week, and that's just damn. That's how you can tell a real tough mother father. Someone that was sick for 3 years, did all those movies, and didn't say a word about it. Okay, here we go. We see if they're gone. If they're gone, they're gone. And I'll do this. Okay, they're gone, so I'm just going to watch a bunch of trailers for y'all. But still, 3 years and dying of cancer, didn't tell no one, and no one pretty much expected. That is guaranteed that you are one tough son of a gun. What I've got here... Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to punch you in the mouth. I punched my secretary here, Princess, in the mouth. She's here, as usual. Give everyone a kiss, Madam Secretary. There you go. You got your kisses, everybody. This is just a collection of Cinema Wasteland, put out about 4 or 5 of them, and this is their trailers, and this is just a bunch of mix-mash of them, and I'll be talking about them, and I'll just be able to talk about the movies there. So, here we go. You can tell the biggest double horror feature ever. The first movie to be rated X by violence in the United States. I Drink Your Blood. The first one of the first Manson-sploitation / zombie-sploitation movies ever. This is about a little boy whose daughter gets kidnapped by a Manson-esque, gets kidnapped and raped by a Manson-esque family. So he injects her fruit pies with rabies, and everything gets shit. This is a Night of the Living Dead exploitation. Manson exploitation. A virus movie. This movie has basically everything, and it's gory as hell if you can find it uncut, which if you get the Grindhouse releasing Blu-ray, yeah, you'll get it uncut. Very good movie. Very nasty, too. If you ever see the trailer, if you look it up on there, which is why I'm watching, you'll see some of the nastier bits already. A pregnant woman stabbing herself in the stomach, a guy getting his feet sliced open with a knife. It's good. It lives up to its reputation. but its co-feature, I Eat Your Skin, doesn't live up to the reputation. Well, yeah, his reputation is that it's a very boring piece of shit from the 1960s that he got and put on there so he could have a double bill. But this movie goes down in exploitation history as one of the most brutal and violent films of the early 70s. With Lynn Lowry in her first role, Bashkar as the Charles Manson wannabe, and he's freaking awesome in this. Him tormenting the little boy is just beautiful. Hey, midget, get over here. I love those lines. But I drink your blood. Yeah. And if you notice, when you watch the trailer on YouTube or on this, on any collection it's on, there is no thing. And now we have one of the greatest drive-in films, pretty much the third greatest drive-in film of all time. Yeah, number one being Thunder Road, number two, Last House on the Left. You have Tobe Hooper's Made in Texas classic, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is the first, Joe Bob said it the best, it was the first movie that actually made you believe that it was made by crazy people and not just some students out of Texas who basically shot this weekend after weekend, and it took them months to film it. This one is just an absolute classic. And what's funny is this movie was shot as a PG. You gotta make them stop. great performances all around from Jen Sydow, Gunnar Hansen. Just everybody in this movie is great. And when this hit drive-ins, no one knew what the hell hit them. It hit them like the scene where a guy gets hit in the head with there. And here's one of the best, if not the best, Ed Gein exploitation movie there is. And that is The Range of Robert's Blossom. This is the closest you're going to get to the real case. It even has the little bit where he sees the girls that he kills as deers, which is the way he is. The uncut version is pretty hard to find because MGM owns the R-rated version in the U.S. rights. But Tom Carr, the producer, owns the rights to the uncut version. And so far, we haven't had a great U.S. DVD or Blu-ray release of the uncut version. But yeah, this is Bob Clark's last drive-in, grindhouse, sleaze, exploitation movie before he went into mainstream Hollywood. And yes, Bob Clark directed a lot of this, but Alan Ormsby got the credit because Clark didn't want to put his name on this because he thought it was too violent. And another great one, this is William Girdler. And this is the hardest one to find because of a rights issue, and that's three on a meat hook. You have this nasty, no-budget, Tennessee, southern exploitation version of the Ed Gein story, and you have this guy doing narrations that's something out of a fucking Ingmar Bergman film. Three little girl. Hell, the narration's better than the movie, and I love William Girdler films. Drive the joy. A conspiracy. A fear. An echolodger in the mind. It's like this guy knew a lot of big words. He's like, damn it, I don't give a damn if this is some cheap exploitation film. I'm going to put every fancy freaking word that I know into it. This is fun if you like it, especially if you love William Girdler's work, and why the hell wouldn't you? I love this. Here we go. Three and one, just and homeward. Last through his mist to the execution. Lends some time, like none of the hero's blood on his hands. The broken dolls, not the ending. Stopped. Three. On a meat hook. The Corpse Grinders. The best killer cat movie out there, and that's saying a lot. This is about a couple of dudes that grind up human peoples into cat food so the cats become feral and start eating people. Corpse grinding machine. This is just drive-in sleaze classic. I mean, it's just so good. It's so bad that it's good. It's very bad. Yeah. Caleb. He's still young. There it is. Cheech's girlfriend. They have a Cheech and Chong look like very friendly cats on the attack. Wish I knew what was on the other side of this door. This is Grinders. I love it. He's like, we need more bodies. So he goes outside and there's a monster outside. He just bonks him over the head with a glass bottle and just takes the bottle and throws it into the corpse grinding machine where they grind corpses. And I love the fact that they don't even take the clothes off. They just dump them in the corpse grinding machine and people don't know this about the cough, the buttons, and all that. Grinders. Ted B. Michaels. The only movie, this is a Blood Feast ripoff called The Undertaker and His Pals. What's funny about this is that all the gore is cut from the movie, but it's in the trailer. Every gore shot that's not in the movie is in the trailer. So far they have not found an uncut print. And this movie is full of horrible puns. Like, the people that get killed are Miss Lamb. So, the diner serves leg of lamb. And this is a neat little thing. The movie at first is in black and white until the girl gets stabbed the first time, and then it turns color with the gore. That depraved generation, that sick generation, that was used in a song off of Rob Zombie's Hillbilly Deluxe. Scalpel flashing, tongue twisting, axe-hatting motorcycle maniac. And I love it because if you close your eyes during this trailer, it sounds a hell of a lot worse than any of the crap that you see on screen. You tell me. I love it. So sleazy. neighbors. This is a very punny movie. I didn't say funny, I said punny. There's like so many puns in this movie that there's more puns than they are gore. And that's if you find the uncut print. But like I said, you look at a trailer, you get every gore shot that's cut from the movie. Be deadly. This one's a fucked up little film. You go in there and they sell it, it's like Exorcist, Exorcist, Exorcist. And then you go to watch it and you get the, well, you remember 2 movies ago you had the corpse grinders? Now we have the corpse fuckers. Mary Wilcox, who loves to, who accidentally shoots her dad as a kid so it makes her want to fuck corpses. Especially corpses that look like her dad. So, you go in expecting an exploitation ripoff and you get a necrophilia movie. This is, with Lyle Wagner, this doesn't play like a sleaze film. This plays like a daytime soap opera with corpse fucking. Fucked up stuff. I love it, but damn. Doomed to love only the dead. Lovers of the Dead. I love it. They have that ritual. They all just lift their arms up and their robes just whoop. This one is one of the sleaziest ones. And here's a classic, drive-in classic. Children play with dead things. With more corpse diddling. And some of the coolest looking zombies from the early 70s out there. And one of the best black comedies out there. And even the audio trailers have some great gags that's not even in the movie. This is Bob Clark and Alan Ormsby's first film, and it's good. There's not a really terrific print of it out there because, well, when you shoot a movie for 10 cents and it's shipped out all over and it's very popular. So you get to see, the yaks are loose. The Thrill Killers from Ray Dennis Steckler. Ray Dennis Steckler was the exploitation guy to come out of Vegas. Las Vegas, that is. This is another one where they show you there. And it's another one with the old gag of, oh my God, the killers are really there. So they have people hiding. Cannonball Girls. Hold on for a second. They're young. They're beautiful. And very, very sexy. First to death. Oh, God, that freaking bell. Yes, when they had this movie in the U.S., they had this annoying, loud-ass bell that would play whenever there was anything erotic or gory or... Just boing! And this is the first movie of Eugene Levy and Andrea Martin. So you can tell this is pure, true blue connexploitation. Torso. one of the most popular of the giallos over in the U.S. in the 70s because of that great singer and this great trailer. The screen, the terror. And this is one of the greatest fucking trailers ever. I could talk, but just listen to this great gags in it. Which is on here. What's happening inside? Yeah, we got 1040, Sam from Dice Conference Sector. Did you answer? This is the long version of the trailer with all the gags. There's some where they just cut it down short. I love this guy's laugh. That was a short version. It's missing two gags. But moving on, we have the one, the great, the best filmmaker to come out of Staten Island ever, Andy Milligan. We won. When the book about Milligan comes back into print, you need to get this because it's one of the best, if not the best, book about a Z-movie director out there. It is just so good. And you could tell by watching Andy Milligan's movies that he hated religion. He hated family. He was very anti-family. But this is Andy Milligan for you. You could just tell by watching his movies that this boy had some serious issues. If there's any of his that I would recommend to see, it would be The Ghastly One, Seeds, definitely Vapors. Vapors is definitely a must-see. So is Nightbirds. Me ones. Ray Sagar, the Wizard of Gore. This movie was part of the last three gore films that A.C. Lewis did, along with The Gruesome Twosome and The Gore Gore Girls. And this is Ray Sagar, who could not do magic for his own to save his life. So, at the end of the movie, they gave him the Ray Sagar Award for Manual Dexterity because of how clumsy he was. And here he is as Montag, the Magnificent, who kills girls on stage and somehow uses his magical powers to make people believe that they were not killed. And then 30 minutes later, it shows they're dead. They turn into the dead bodies again. Look, this is going to show. Look right here, and you can just see that the sword that rolls up, you can see that he did not know how to use it, and the sword is like, twing, twang, twang, twing, twisting. It's got got some of his best gore effects, too. When Ray doesn't screw him up, God bless him. Like right here, you see the guts fall off, and then all of a sudden you could tell that that hole punch didn't go 1 inch into her stomach. Same with this spike in her head. Now this trick right here with the guillotine, he pulls off great. My neck out. But then the idiot director, H.G. Lewis, said, decided to show a close-up of the head rolling across the stage where you could actually tell that it was fake. And it took about 20 takes to get the head to stand up straight there. I don't know. There you go. Nowadays, you young kids probably look at this and go like, what's this crap? It looks fainty, it looks phony, it looks fake. Yeah, we still loved it, though. The fact is we didn't give a crap. JC, a.k.a. Who Are You, a.k.a. Beyond the Door, the most financially successful of the Exorcist ripoffs. And the devil is a fucking asshole in this. I talked this before about the one with Nate, but the devil is a true asshole in this. Deep Red, a.k.a. Profondo Russo, a.k.a. Suspiria 2. This is just an amazing classic giallo, which was one of Dario Argento's biggest hits over in the U.S. He had 3 big hits in the U.S. in the 70s, and that was Suspiria, Deep Red, and The Bird with the Crystal Plumage. Those were big box office hits. For a lot, it's a tie between this and Suspiria as his best. But gore-wise, Suspiria is his best. Plot-wise, this one is the best. Brian De Palma's first really big hit, Sisters with Margot Kidder. And Sisters. This is the one with William Finley. William Finley with a meat cleaver cutting the 2 twins apart in the surgery. This is a very Hitchcockian movie. This is a great film if you like Hitchcockian. And here's another one with Emile Lanfork. In one of the first horror films about the 7 deadly sins. You can get this on pretty much almost any DVD PD set of the OOs, and that's The Devil's Nightmare. And depending on what cut you got, there's the cut version and the uncut. And it's still great. Oh, House of Exorcism, the cut version of Lisa and the Devil. When Barrio Baba and Alfred Leone could not sell Lisa and the Devil, they had him recut it and shoot new scenes into making it into a pure Exorcist ripoff called The House of Exorcism. And it wasn't that good unless you want to hear Equal Elke Summer Curse, Lady Frankenstein. This is the one where the movie ends with Frankenstein, the monster boinking Lady Frankenstein to death. And Joseph Cotton as Baron von Frankenstein. Insatiable love for the dead. Yes, this is the song, this is the movie whose trailer has the line from Rob Zombie's Living Dead Girl. And this one of the most fucked up of the monsters. This one is okay. It's good, not as good as it could have been. Cool ass monster, though. She would do anything for love.
And she'll do anything for love.
But she won't do that. Yes, a 90s joke, deal with it. Yes, back in the 70s, we could show boobies in trailers and get away with it. Anything they could to sell the movie.
She's a new, more terrifying monster.
I am a father's daughter.
You are referring to an animal transplant. Only the monster she creates can satisfy her strange desires.
Sorry I'm not talking, but this is not one of my favorites. Like I said, it's okay, but...
There has never been a movie like...
Lady Frankenstein. Flesh Feast. Oh, God. Veronica Lake is a Jew experiment who puts maggots on people's faces to make them get younger. And then they bring Hitler to her and she feeds Hitler to the maggots and lets them kill her. One of the best comic book movies ever made. Amicus Films, 1972, Tales from the Crypt. Both of the ones they did from EC Comics, Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, are good movies. And I opened the double, and I own the double feature of both of them. They're very good movies. With one of the best performances ever by Peter Cushing. And the best adaption of All Through the Night, which any time that they've done a Tales from the Crypt, they've done an adaption of that. And Ralph Richardson as the Crypt Keeper. And here is the sequel, Vault of Horror, which is good, just not as good as the first one, which means Tales from the Crypt is a 5 out of 5 and this is a 4 out of 5. It's still very good and very fun, with a great performance by Christopher Lee in The Voodoo Story. And Midnight Mass, one of the best vampire short films there is. Life Worth Leaving. What's funny is this movie has two of the stories that were redone for the television series. Night. Which one of these? The zombies. Oh, the Ghost Galleon. Which, if you watch it on DVD, it kind of sucks. But if you watch it in a drive-in, it was pretty goddamn good. Oh, it was already over, so if you get a chance to watch Dying Blind Dead films, watch them. Blood Eaters, the other zombie film to come out of Pittsburgh. This one even has John Amplis in it. Doesn't mean it's good. It just means this is the other zombie film out of Pittsburgh. What's in Frasier? This is another famous double feature. Oh, of the Dead, Orgy of the Living Dead, which has Mario Bava's Kill Baby Kill, which is fucking great. No, this is one of the just greatest way trailers, because how do you sell a movie without showing the movies or even talking about the movies? This is how. And the Living Dead. Curse the Living Dead. And Fang the Living Dead. The second Dr. Orloff film from one Jess Franco, which is the diabolical Dr. Z or the Amazing Spider-Woman. This is not that bad. This is one of the best of the Orloff films that Franco did. It's about a woman with poison fingernails. Ooh, and these doctors frame her father and cause him to kill himself. They use this girl to get her fingernails poisoned and get revenge on the people who went after her. A very dark and good little film. If I was going to pick any of the early Francos, this would be one of my, oh my God. Africa, Blood and Guts. What do you get when you get a dictator? If you've seen Cannibal Holocaust, they show this thing where they paid people to kill these people in Africa. This is the movie that it was taking from, with real staged murders. Africa Adio, a.k.a. Africa Blood and Guts, a.k.a. Well, this would be the most racist film we did, but we gotta do something better, so let's make Adio Zio Tom. I own this on a double feature with Adio Zio Tom, the longer cuts of Africa, Blood and Guts. It's Africa, Dio, and Dio, Zio, Tom. The longer cuts of Goodbye, Uncle Tom, and Africa, Blood and Guts. This is just nasty with a shitload of animal murders in it. I can't really understate how nasty and racist this movie is. What happened was, is even with the fake footage, is that these filmmakers were making a movie, and I forget what the original, it was about hunters, poachers, and they ended up getting caught asshole deep in the middle of the African Congo Revolution with the Mau Maus and all that. So they ended up making one of the nastiest, ugliest, most racist film there is. And Jerry Ghost decided to cut this film to make it even nastier and more racist. I love this. No scenes will be shown. Now bloody horror. And then it shows a shotgun blowing someone's head off. See here, night of sudden brutal horror, bloody horror. It's only a moon. See, look, bloom. We can't show you any films there, but here's somebody. Night, evil night. The alternate title for Bob Clark's seminal slasher film, Black Christmas. I keep wondering why whenever people bring up modern 80s slashers, they keep forgetting that this one, a 1975 film, really was the first of that style of slasher. And one of the first of the three moot ones. There were three big ones. There was Black Christmas, Halloween, and Friday the 13th, which were parents' horror films. The kid's going away to school. The kid's going away to camp. The kid's doing an adult job. Now, here's a good, sleazy little British one with Tom Baker. Donald Pleasant, a bizarre plant creature, real freaks. The House That Screamed, one of the most political slashers you're ever going to see. And very damn good. Both of his movies were damn good. Which is The House That Screamed and Who Can Kill a Child. Very dark, very scary, very politicized. That uses the tropes of horror films to spread messages, their message. I would recommend both of them very, very, very much. Oh, one of the most dirtiest, grimiest, sleaziest films in the early 70s ever, which I'm still shocked this motherfucker uncut got a PG rating, and that is Blood and Lace. You got incest, you got murder, you got, hell, you pretty much got every nasty little thing you could think of. It's like, okay, let's just put all this nasty shit in this movie and just say go for it. If this movie doesn't make you want to take a shower, then you're not jaded enough. Get off the phone. Tenial Elevation. The most fun movie that H.G. Lewis ever did. A drive-in redneck classic, and that's 2,000 Maniacs. Great bluegrass, great gore, great acting, and just fun. Came an awful sound. Yee-haw! Hell's gonna rise again. Yee-haw! It's gonna rise again. Now don't you worry, that old teetering rock's gonna get you. It's just so much fun for a gore film. Oh, the gun, and he made them Yankees run, and he done. He made H.G. Lewis really loved his redneck movies, and this is one of his best. Yeah. There's Moonshine Mountain, This Stuff Will Kill You, Year of the Yahoo, 2000 Maniacs, of course. Now, Moonshine Mountain, I just love. And screw you, Nate, H.G. Lewis was a good director. Damn it. Oh, the movie that changed everything in 1968. Pittsburgh's Night of the Living Dead. This movie changed everything. Fucked up everybody. I mean, you had ghouls. You had flesh eating. I mean, this was like nothing that people had ever seen at the time when it came out. And this is a movie not about the living dead, but about how they are fucked because they can't work together. And that was always Romero's biggest thing. As long as you work together, you have a chance. Oh, Larry Cohen's best. Religion, sci-fi, God told me to. This is a cross between Son of Sam, a little bit of Chariots of the Gods. This one is amazingly better than you would think it is from watching this. Or even just watching, reading a synopsis of it. This movie is a pretty damn good little movie. And this is an early proto-modern slasher. Because they kept it as a monster movie until the last little bit. You can hear like the final wheel flip, 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 flopping in the freaking film projector before you even realize this is not a monster movie. Hell, they just gave away the ending, but still, Tower Island of Horror, Tower of Death, or Horror on Snake Mound, Wildcat Women in 3D. 3D Kung Fu Boobies. How does that sound to you? 3D Kung Fu Boobies. And then the lovemaking. I want you more. It's even got generic porn music. Darn, 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 darn. Come see me. This is the one I've never had the luck to run into a copy, and I wish I could, because it just looks so sleazy and dirty. Infinite Terror. Ah! Ilsa, She-Wolf of the SS. This is the movie that created the short-lived run of Nazi exploitation. These were a big hit. And the jaded audiences of the grindhouses who love their S&M movies. And this is all this is a softcore S&M porn disguised as a horror film. This is a nasty piece of work. I like it, though, but it's nasty as hell. Filmed on the sets of Hogan's Hero right before they destroyed him with Uschi Diggart, Dwayne Thorne. Ilsa. Yeah, make her come or she'll cut your willy off. Oh, gosh.
Of all the butchers in the Third Reich, none was as ruthless as Ilsa. She-Wolf of the SS. In 50 minutes, no one coming up. Together with her black widow. She committed crimes so terrible, even the SS feared her.
And out and out, please, classic. Ilsa. This is one of the few subgenres that even most hardcore sleaze fans are like, oh God, we don't want to take credit for this. Love Camp 7 was the one that started this. Love Camp 7, Ilsa. The best of the cannibal movies and the first, the one, the only, Man from Deep River. This one is just fucking great. There's no way around it. This one is just great. This is less of a cannibal film and more of a man called horse exploitation movie. And it's good. And I love it how it starts. Is they think he's a fish and he thinks they're dumb savages. But by the end of the movie, he becomes one of them. And it humanizes him and the natives. Cockfighting. With Mimi Leigh. One of Umberto Lenzi's best.
Only a few miles upstream, modern man discovers the savage world. Its bestiality.
And if you get to see a good prettiness, this is a gorgeous freaking film. Umberto Lenzi knocks it out of the park both ways. He makes a very dark, very brutal, but very beautiful movie. This one, of all the cannibal films, this is the one I would recommend as a movie. Hey, I'm going to bank you now.
It has to be a wild dream. It is unbelievable. It is real. It can't be. It's part of it.
watch this in the trailer in the movie, it's like they're torturing him. And it turns out this whole ritual is them making him part of the tribe. I just love the little switch like that. A must-see movie, and one of those, if you can see yourself in an exploitation film, you have to see. The second best drive-in movie of all time, Last House on the Left. Wes Craven's nasty, brutal, mean-spirited fuck you of a debut film. This is an ugly film because it talks about ugly things. And it even has an ugly, ugly ending because the truth is ugly. Once something like this happens, you can't go back to normal. On the left. By fainting. Keep repeating. It's only a movie. Only a movie. That was one of the most used taglines of drive-in history. Only a movie. Only a movie. And this movie crossed over, too, because it plays as good in the grindhouses as it did in the drive-ins. Carnage, a.k.a. Bay of Blood, a.k.a. The New House on the Left. Those, the Last House on the Left and Bay of Blood were packaged together and reissued so many times in the 70s. I mean, it's like every 8 months it'd be like The New House on the Left. But yeah, those two were always packaged because Hallmark owned both films and they played good together. This is one of the first splatter films where there's almost pretty much no plot, just an excuse to kill a whole lot of people very violently. And it's very good. I would this is definitely another one on the must-see list. Bay of Blood, a.k.a. And I love how in the Carnage trailer it shows like this rainbow of colors and stuff where it shows the violence without showing the violence. If you want to see what the violence really looks like, you gotta come watch the movie. Very successful, and it played throughout the 70s. One of the biggest hits of the 70s at the drive-in. I would put this at about number 5 after Walking Tall. Sorry, I'm just enjoying the music. I love it. Carnage. Directed by Mario Bava. The third and the least of all of H.G. Lewis's gore films. I drink your color me blood red. Color me blood red. It violates my one rule, which is a movie can be anything but boring. Once a movie is boring, then there's no way to save it. Thank you. there's not that many kills in this movie, but they're pretty decent ones. But like I said, it takes so long to get to any action. I mean, the idea is great. A guy who discovers the right shade of red when he bashes his girlfriend's head in and her blood gets on the paint canvas. This is like another version of A Bucket of Blood, except it doesn't have the black humor, and it's not that funny, and it's, like I said, it's a very boring, boring movie. Getting into a little bit into the gore trilogy, it was Blood Feast, 2000 Maniacs, and Color Me Blood Red, and then he was sick of doing gore films, so he quit and did all sorts of other stuff, which is like Sexploitation, Suburban Roulette, and a movie like that, Moonshine Mountain, a kiddie film with Jimmy, the World's Greatest. It was like a little bit of everything. And then he went back to gore. He went back to horror with A Taste of Blood first, though. One of the films shown at this year's Monsterama, and narrated by Brother Theodore, Mad Doctor of Blood Island. Green blood. This one, they would give you green blood when you watch the movie. I don't know, it was Kool-Aid, but they would have like a ritual and you would do it. Just another gimmick to sell a film. We didn't warn you. Anytime you've seen him, seen Brother Theodore narrow the trailer, you didn't know if the movie would be any good, but the trailer is just badass. This is the first of the two Dr. Lorca films. And along with... Oh, baby. Night. Oh, God. Silent night. Boring night. I mean, bloody night. This movie would be a lot better if the trailer didn't give away the big twist. That happens 20 minutes of the movie. It becomes Patrick O'Neill and Astrid Harris only last 20 minutes of the movie, and then they pull off your basic psycho twist, and boom, there's the real star of the film, Mary Warnoff. Christmas. It's funny, she's the star of the movie and she's only in the trailer for maybe 3 seconds. And the ending makes no damn sense at all. I'd real spoil the ending, but it makes no sense. I don't even know what the hell going on. One of the most homoerotic horror films ever. Night of Bloody Horror. That has Mickey Hargitay, the Crimson Executioner, running around talking about how women sap the potency from a man's body. Evil little monkey, he decided. Horror. Crimson Executioner, all oiled up in a wrestling mask, talking about how women will tap your potency and how men need to stay away from women and only hang out with other men. I'm not saying it means anything, but... The movie is not that good, but Mickey Hargitay himself just badass in it. Just listening to him talking his crap and killing women is just glorious. Web. Bit of horror. Terrifying. Plop. One of my favorite Mexican Mexi-exploitation movies ever, Night of the Bloody Apes. I need to do this sometime. Put that on your list, Steve. Okay. This is half monkey. This is about basically they put a monkey's heart in a guy's body to try to save it, transplant it. And it turns out it's the equivalent of putting a Porsche engine into your John Deere tractor. Lawn tractor, that is. And so you got a lawnmower that goes like 200 miles an hour, and that's supposedly what happens. Because his heart is so strong, he turns into a gorilla and starts killing people for no reason. It makes no sense. But by God, it's fun. And it uses real medical footage of a heart transplant. Yes, real footage of a heart transplant. In the body of a beast. This is a remake of another wrestle of a Luchadora movie from the 60s. Dr. Horror. On the night of the Bloody Apes. Of the Bloody Apes. This is another one where they give up all of the goodies in the trailer. Almost every gore thing, and this is the movie where a guy scalps a bald man, where you hold on to the shot for too long, and it's like, oh my God, he ripped his scalp. Wait, this motherfucker's bald. Ain't that a bitch? But then you start laughing. There it is. He just ripped off the bald guy's toupee. They shred or call you to pieces. Orgy terror. Cannibal Holocaust. Great trailer, good movie. If you want to find out about this one, we just did me, Fred, and Gorefield just did a commentary on this, or a live watch, as I call it. So we've already covered this. What's funny is this movie never really got a big theatrical release in this country until the late 90s. I mean, it played a little on there, but no one would touch it. great fucking trailer, though. They knew they... I mean, you just watch this trailer and they knew they had something special here. It's just sad that they did their job too well and pretty much no one would touch it. And honestly, I can't blame them. Even those of us who love it would be like, yeah, I don't blame them for not wanting to show this shit. Yes, even in the wild days of 80s exploitation and set with the grindhouse and all that, no one would touch this movie. That should say something right there. That no one would touch it during the days when they would show shit like Fight for Your Life and I Spit on Your Grave and just other nasty-ass films. Cannibal Ferox, too. They showed that. But not Cannibal Holocaust. Welcome to Horror Hotel, another one that takes from the Psycho book of let's have our star in there and then 20 minutes into the movie, let's kill her. But it's another great, it's a great creepy little movie. And one of Christopher Lee's first movies to get released over here. I would highly recommend this if you're looking for a great old-school gothic horror. Horror Hotel or Inn of the Dead. Now, this one I just find too sleazy and disgusting. Hell, even the guy who, even one of the stars of this movie, Giovanni Lombardo Ridisi, if you get the DVD of Cannibal Ferox by Grindhouse, which has the uncut commentary, because on the Laserdisc and DVD, he opens it up with this. This movie is a piece of shit. It's worth it just to hear Radice talk shit about this movie. This is just mean and ugly and unlikable. And this is calling myself someone who loves Cannibal Holocaust. Now it's
they made one mistake. They got caught. And when you get caught in this jungle, there's no bail and no jail. There's just punishment and pain.
Cruel, barbaric, primitive. For what they have done,
make them die slowly.
Humiliation and mutilation were just the appetizers at this blood feast. Seeing this, oh, let me die so. And let me die so.
This is the one with the boobies through the hooks, and it just looks painful.
The main portal.
Joint. There goes your dinky! Sorry, I mean, you can only say that you just don't like a movie so many times before you go, come on, get to the next one. Come on, come on. Oh, Princess herself has her opinion of this movie. It's the only Blu-ray of mine she's ever chewed up, period. I should say something right there. And when I told Radice about this, he just looked at me and said, good dog. One of the greatest gore films ever. And the movie that really got me hooked on horror. I mean, I was watching a lot of them, but this one got me hooked hardcore. This movie I've seen so many times, I don't think I can ever watch it again. I think I've seen this over 80 to 90 times. And that was just one weekend. You bastard!
Once you wake up the dead, you've got a real mess on your hands.
Not anymore. What got this to me is its mix of horror and humor. Not one of them showed any appreciation. Get a job in a sideshow. One of the last films to be released wide. Unrated.
This is not an advertisement for a new movie.
They're showing every fucking trailer for Reanimator here.
If you have nightmares, if you have a weak heart, before you experience Reanimator, think very carefully. H.P. Lovecraft's classic tale of horror, Reanimator, it will scare you to pieces. This motion picture contains scenes of horror that may be considered too intense for anyone under the age of 18. Remember, you've been warned.
And another fucking trailer for re-fucking Animator.
If you are squeamish, if you have nightmares, if you have a weak heart, before you experience Reanimator, think very carefully. H.P. Lovecraft's classic tale of horror, Reanimator, it will steal you to pieces.
Ah, Living Dead Girl. God, is this one killing it? John Rollins' best. Obsession, drugs, danger of toxic chemicals. This is a great fucking movie. And also the movie with the title of the Rob Zombie song from Zombie song came from Hellbilly Deluxe. The Morte Vivante, Living Dead Girl. This is a movie about enabling, how someone would enable someone to be a junkie or just, you feel sorry for her by the time the movie's over. Very beautiful film, too. I mean, Jean Rollin was a man of his own thing. He made the most beautiful, artistic horror films ever made. If anyone was ever truly able to combine horror with art, it was Jean Rollin. Seen it, I highly recommend you see it. Okay. Okay, I'm calling it a night here. Thank you guys for listening. And this Wednesday is going to be me and Nate doing Good Directors, Bad Films, Part 2. And on Saturday, we have Marcus Koch here with me, Gorefilth, and Frederick Gorey as we talk about his movies. So we got a lot planned, and I don't know what I got planned for Labor Day Day, but I mean Memorial Day Sunday. But all I know is this. We love you guys. Thank you for all for listening. Good night. Goodbye. And don't forget, always smile. Here we go. Good night.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Open the circuit.
Blood receiver pressure increases. It's at full.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Well, Magneto's right. There's a war coming.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
You sure you're on the right side?
Hasta la vista, baby.